Radio Prague News.
The spat over ambassadorial nominations between President Zeman and Foreign Minister Schwarzenberg has intensified. The Czech National Bank board member says that the economy may be improving. And the Czech government is planning to give 4 million crowns to help rebuild the Czech-American town West. During the first days of his visit to Austria, President Miloš Zeman said that if an agreement will not be reached with Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg over ambassadorial appointments, he's willing to ask the Prime Minister to confirm his candidates. Mr. Schwarzenberg responded that if Prime Minister Petr Nečas were indeed to confirm the president's chosen candidates instead of the ones he put forward, his TOP09 party would leave the governing coalition. The president and the foreign minister have been unable to agree on nominations for a number of ambassadorial positions for the past few weeks, including posts in Austria, Russia, and Slovakia. President Miloš Zeman began his first presidential two-day visit to Austria by meeting with the country's president, Heinz Fischer, in Vienna's Hofburg Palace on Tuesday. The two leaders discussed nuclear energy safety, an issue that has always been a divisive one for the neighboring countries, and specifically the expansion of the nuclear power plant Temelín. In an interview with the Austrian news agency APA, the Czech president insinuated that the majority of ethnic Germans in Sudetenland supported and collaborated with the Nazi regime during World War II, and that many of them could have faced much worse punishment than expulsion. The Czech economy is seeing the first signs of a slow recovery, according to a member of the board of the Czech National Bank, Eva Zamrzlová. She based the assessment on the fact that the decline in real estate prices seems to have stopped and the number of mortgages has risen year on year in February. Some analysts expect consumer confidence to begin increasing and that households will be spending more this year than in the previous few years. Some employee unions and the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes have announced that they are ready to strike in response to the personnel changes carried out by the new head of the institute, Pavla Foglova. The union said they are afraid of employee purges and are ready to defend the social and economic rights of their members. Not all of the unions at the institute, though, see Ms. Foglova's actions as problematic. The Czech government will give 4 million crowns, or about $200,000, to the people in the town of West in Texas, where 14 people died and dozens of houses were destroyed as a result of an explosion last week. The Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg made the announcement in Brussels on Tuesday, saying that most of the money will be used to rebuild the Sokol building in the town, where three-quarters of inhabitants are of Czech descent. This year's recipient of the annual Crystal Globe Prize for Outstanding Artistic Contribution to World Cinema at the Karlovy Vary International Film Festival will be the American director and producer Oliver Stone. The announcement was made on Tuesday at a press conference by Jiří Bartoška, head of the festival. The other recipient of the award this year will be the Czech costume designer and artist Theodor Pišťák. This year's festival will take place from 28th of June to the 6th of July. The Dietrichstein Palace in Brno is hosting an exhibit with the remains and reconstructions of the village of Bystřec in South Moravia, which is the best preserved village from the Middle Ages in the Czech Republic. The village was burned in 1401 and remained covered by soil for 600 years until it was uncovered by archaeologists 30 years ago. This is the first exhibit that shows objects found at the site and includes reconstructions of village life. Bystřec is thought to be one of the biggest villages in the area at the time of its destruction. And now for the weather, it will be sunny to partly cloudy in the upcoming days, with possible light showers in some places. Temperatures will be around 20 to 22 degrees Celsius. I'm Masha Walensky, and that's all for the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. Coming up in today's program, the head of the anti-corruption unit of the Czech police resigns after a spat with a popular state attorney. Then, Prague authorities move against illegal sausage sellers in the city's Wenceslas Square. And later in this edition of In Focus, we check out the musical instrument Raketon, created by the artist Michal Cimala, which made its first orchestral appearance this week in Prague. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The anti-corruption unit of the Czech police has been relatively visible in recent times, with operations culminating in charges against two former ministers. But now the unit's head has announced he is to quit after a spat with the high state attorney, who had leveled some damning charges against his department. Ian Willoughby has the story.
When Tomáš Martinec was appointed in 2011 to head the Czech police's Unit for Combating Corruption and Financial Crime, he pledged to uncover graft at the very highest levels. Martinec appeared to be making progress, with the unit's operations recently resulting in charges being filed against David Rath, a former health minister, and Martin Bartak, who headed the Ministry of Defence. Other big names were also fingered, and there was a sharp rise in the number of people tried on the basis of the department's work. However, it's recently emerged that the officer has poor relations, to say the least, with an official he ought to be working closely with, Lenka Bradáčová, the high state attorney. She's a respected figure who many Czechs, thoroughly sick of corruption, hope can bring about genuine change. A recording emerged of Bradáčová informally telling a radio presenter that Martinec was working on fabricating a case linked to a state contract against her estranged husband. This led to speculation of a war between the two parties. However, even before the publication of the tape, she had sent a written request to the police president, Martin Červíček, to evaluate the work of his subordinate. She believed that information was leaking from the anti-graft unit that could damage state cases. Meanwhile, the Minister of Justice, Pavel Blažek, publicly backed the high state attorney, saying the anti-corruption police were employing practices straight out of 1950s communism. Martinec has vehemently denied gathering compromising material aimed at discrediting Bradáčová. However, the tensions between them made it likely that one would have to go. On Monday, it became clear it would be the police chief, who announced at a hastily organized news conference that he would stand down in May. Martinec told reporters his team had done good work, but that it had been undermined by the media coverage of the situation. The police president said he'd acted like a man in resigning. Among those to react was the Prime Minister, Petr Nečas, who said he hoped the move would spell an improvement in communication between the anti-corruption police and the country's state attorney's offices. However, a lot remains unclear about the whole matter, and more details may yet emerge about what's really been happening at the anti-corruption unit. Questions have also been raised about cases in which its officers appeared to drag their heels.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Now, the Prague authorities take action against the operators of fast food stands on the city's Wenceslas Square. 8 kiosks out of the 18 ordered off the square after the city cancelled their contracts remain. The 8th remarkably continues to sell pizza despite the closure order and the imposition of fines. Jan Wellinger has the details.
18 of 23 kiosks selling fast food, newspapers and flowers on Wenceslas Square were to have disappeared by the beginning of January, but 8 remain on the square even now. Prague ordered their removal as part of renovation plans to rejuvenate the site for both locals and tourists, with the aim of discouraging crime. But the kiosks remain. The sizzle is gone, not so the fading ads for sausages and cola. In response, the authorities have not delayed and issued not only fines, but have sued the offenders for their failure to comply. Tereza Králová is the spokeswoman for Prague City Hall.
Right now, owners are being charged 47 crowns per square meter per day, plus they're being fined 10,000 crowns every day for the failure to remove the kiosks. The operators, however, filed a request for the fines to be dropped, so they have not yet come into effect.
Not all were in favor of the stands being closed in the first place, arguing that klobasa sausages were as much a part of Wenceslas Square as the patron saint himself. Some told Czech Radio that the bratwurst, traditionally served with a lick of mustard, should be allowed to stay, albeit with fewer outlets. Here's what some passers-by had to say.
Myslím si, že by se možná třeba mohli omezit, ale ne zcela zrušit.
Taky je to určitá tradice.
Now, the first girl there said, I think they should have left a few, while the second person replied that he thought that the klobasa were something of a tradition. Even the mayor of Prague 1, Oldřich Lomecký, said under no circumstances should bratwurst disappear completely. One reason perhaps two sites on Wenceslas Square have retained permits for the time being and remain open. Even once 22 new designer kiosks are introduced on the famous thruway, some are still likely to sell sausages, only under stricter circumstances than previously. City Councillor Alexandra Oginia explains why the old stands couldn't stay.
Some were open 24 hours a day, which had an influence on criminality. It might seem like we're against business, but the opposite was the case. Businesses across from the stands were left at a market disadvantage.
Many will no doubt be looking forward to improvement of Wenceslas Square, but while empty stands continue to line the thruway, those days still seem far away.
Thank you, Jan Wellinger. Are you familiar with Prague's Wenceslas Square? Do you think the stands should be allowed to stay, or are you looking forward to the planned facelift of the area? Let us know. You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, an unusual two-string instrument called raketon played alongside an orchestra for the first time this week at the Dux Gallery in Prague. Before the world premiere of the new orchestral piece Pro Raketon, Masha Wolinski spoke to the composer of the work and the creator of the instrument itself in this week's In Focus.
The raketon made its first appearance about 3 years ago in a museum exhibit, but this week it made its debut in a contemporary music concert together with Prague's Burg Orchestra. I had a chance to speak to raketon's inventor, Michal Cimala, and to composer Jakub Rataj, who mastered this simple and elegant instrument and wrote the first orchestral piece that includes it. I first spoke to Michal and asked him to give me a sample of all the different sounds that raketon can make by striking and touching its two strings with bows, mallets, and even milk frothers. Take a listen. An amazing variety of sounds. Could you describe some of the parts? What is it made out of?
So it's basically made from tube, usually used for pipeline or for water. And this tube, it's deformate. So I create, just with simple cut, a new shape. Inside is a frame from steel, and the important part are two pickups from bass guitar and two strings from piano, and it's special stand also for that instrument.
When did you first start working on it, and how long did it take you to actually come up with the instrument the way it looks now?
The process was pretty long. The start was in 1999, and the first instrument I finished it about the year 2001, and later, I tried to develop better and better instruments, so I was working pretty continuously on it. And finally, when it was exhibition in Dux in 2010, here was exhibited about 19 of my experimental instruments. So it was about 10 years of developing different kind of stuff.
And the other instruments that you've made, were they similar to a raketon, or were they all different?
They are similar, but Each one is special, so it's always based on the pickups from bass guitar, guitar and strings, but the shapes are different, and I did also 10 guitars from snowboards. I cut the snowboards and made some weird wild instruments from it.
And have any of them already appeared in concert?
Yeah, I was using those instruments for my performances, always when it's opening of my exhibition. It's some performance connected with that event, and I was also playing with band and with few bands like guests. So sometimes I was playing with professional musicians, and this experience with Orchestra Berg and the connection to Jakub Rataj, composer of piece for Raketon. It's really special because it's absolutely professional work, and I'm first time working with that kind of musicians with orchestra. So it's very special experience for me.
So I'll ask Jakub, what was the experience like for you? When did you start getting to know this new instrument?
So this idea to write a piece for Raketon and the orchestra came up when the conductor of Orchester Berg came and asked me that there's this new instrument, it looks just great and it has a wonderful sound. So if I'd be interested in writing a piece for it, because he knows that I play electric guitar, and I also play with objects, and I'm active as a performer. So I was very curious how the work is gonna be, and well, I went to the atelier Trafačka, and I started to play on it and to look for the sounds and to discover the possibilities the instrument is able to give.
How long did it actually take you to get comfortable with all the different possibilities that Raketon offers?
Well, I think I discovered maybe a little piece of the possibilities that this instrument provides. But I don't know how long. Few hours maybe, but few very intense hours.
Can you compare a Raketon to any other instrument, or is it completely unique?
Well, it is completely unique in the point of view that it combines many instruments in one. So, for example, there's this one native instrument from Brazil, berimbau. If you play with the stick on these metal strings, it has a sound that you can get from berimbau. When you use the bow, you get a sound that is similar to amplified cello sound. When you use different techniques, it sounds a bit like a strange electric guitar, and so on and so on. So, as it is a combination of different shapes and different materials, it is unique, but you can look for these sounds in different places.
Do you think this is an instrument that is easy to compose for? Can you imagine yourself composing more pieces for it in the future?
To compose one piece, it was not easy, because it has only two strings, and I had to think of what I want to do, if it's going to be like a virtuoso piece, or more a timbre piece. So I used it in this one more timbre-like way, and I think that if I would write another piece, it would be more difficult, because there is actually no literature. It is absolutely free what you can do. You are very free to write what you want, but at the same time it's harder to do it because it's new.
While Jakub was discovering Raketon and writing the music, did the two of you discover anything new about it, any new sounds, or maybe the special instruments that you use with it?
Definitely, he showed me how it's possible to play regular tones on it, because he measured the strings and divided and make points on it, so you can play simple melodies on it. So yeah, I discovered new stuff.
Do you think that this is an instrument that you can eventually maybe teach at a musical school, that it's simple enough to learn?
I don't know. I don't know.
Are you planning to make more of them? I mean, this is obviously difficult to teach a wider group with just one instrument.
This year I will make a new one, and it will be possible playing like regular music on it. There will be bars and there will be more strings, 6 strings. So the possibilities will be like more open.
How often are new musical instruments created these days?
There exist some people on the world. They are very interested to create some weird and new instruments. And it's not a huge community, but it exists, I don't know, 100 people. They try to do it, something like this.
More. I'm quite sure that there are more, because this this has something to do with sound art in general. So there are lots of people who are interested in sound installations, in making sound sculptures, sound objects, and so on. And that's just a step to create a new instrument.
And I guess it's a very modern and futuristic idea in many ways, right? It's combining technology and art.
Yes, but that's actually what always the people were looking for. It doesn't matter if it was 100 years ago, or that was the intonao rumori of the futurists, composers, and so on. So the interest of looking for new methods and new sounds, new methods of getting these sounds, this interest, I think, will never die. You know, it's like looking for new colors or something.
That was part of the composition Pro Rakedon by Jakub Rataj, who spoke to Masha Volinsky. That edition of In Focus was also the final part of our English language program today. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz, and you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. If you have any comments or questions, you can easily get in touch with us. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12-12099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.